Jeffrey Lewis, aka Jeffro. Welcome to the podcast. This is our second time around.
Second attempt.
Yeah, last time, my bad, technical difficulties, my whole recorder burnt out. But here we are. You just got back from your honeymoon. You're looking rested.
Super rested. I'm ready to get back into it. Ever since I came back, I've been like just feeling like dancing, just doing a lot more, doing things that I haven't even done before in my life. But I just been thinking, like I've been imagining it while I'm on my honeymoon. So I can't wait to get in the lab today.
So while you were on your honeymoon, you're fantasizing about breaking.
Exactly.
Nice.
You got to be obsessed with it. You got to be obsessed with it.
I like it. Well, congrats on the wedding. It looked beautiful from what I saw on social media. Did you guys have a good time?
Yeah, and the beautiful thing about everything is both sides of our families, both of our friends are dancers. So once it came to the reception, it was just nonstop dancing. Everybody dancing. The vibes were right. Our parents danced with each other, moms and dads, everything. So it was a beautiful moment for sure.
Incredible. That is very, very cool. Yeah. Jeffro, you've had a crazy year. How did you get to this point? Like what took place for you to reach a point where now you're at this level?
I do not know. No, it's literally just keeping my head down and just grinding, literally. And, you know, I just surround myself with people that's really there for me and that pushes me. So it's just nothing but positivity and just hopes for something better, hopes for the Olympics, hopes for business-wise, like just an in-kind, of everything that I do. So, and an in-kind of everything that everybody else around me does. So it's just, we're real supportive. So I just have a real good support system around me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and realistically, it doesn't even feel like work. It just almost feels like we're just constantly just helping each other and just building. So it feels good.
That's amazing. Well, you know, I think a lot of people that look up to you and look to you for leadership or to model their careers off of, they probably see the, you know, Team USA on your chest, all the, you know, the victories and amazing things that you've accomplished on your wall. You're sitting in your home gym that you have. You are a pro athlete. And I think they wonder, how did you make that happen? Like, how does one achieve that? Do you have a formula for that, or now a roadmap that you followed and you're like, oh yeah, this is something I could teach maybe or share? Or was it just, you just dance and it unfolds on its own?
There's really no recipe or no pathway to, for sure, on the breaking side of things. I feel like everything is more so just being genuine with however you move on the person, like on the personal level, and on how you move on the, just on your breaking, on the breaking side of things, as far as being true to yourself, being original, creating your own style, knowing how to create out of nothing. So these are a lot of the things that I've had to learn and just develop as an individual. And it all just came from like the mind, like imagining it at first, and then having a good support system around you. And that's what kind of propels myself, propels others to just be great and just do things. Because in this game, there's no pathway. There's no right or wrong. Because at the same time, we get judged off of our styles. And which is kind of weird, because we're told to be our own individual, but at the same time, we're getting judged off of moves that somebody made and moved off of what I've made. And the judge has to be in favor of it. And it just seems kind of weird, but at the same time, it's that's part of the beautiful thing about hip hop and breaking. It's just like we create. And then it's kind of like against this, like A and B, who created better? A and B, who performed better? A and B, who connected with the music better? So I don't know. I just feel like it's all about just how you move and how you create and being genuine in that. And that's what kind of propels you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think people listening, they're like, yeah, that makes sense in my heart. But in my mind, I have a hard time seeing that being a truth, because there has to be like these steps that you take. Are there any particular steps or moves, meaning like business moves, career moves, choices of like, okay, I'm going to go to this thing, or I'm going to start this company, or I'm going to do this project, that has been a key for you finding the success that you have today?
Yeah, I think whenever I created FitBreak, my fitness program, that's kind of what put me in the mindset of discipline, of creating, pushing yourself, strength and conditioning, mobility, everything that I needed to just elevate my breaking. That's kind of what gave me that. But at the same time, it taught me discipline, just hard work. So even though I didn't get the results that I wanted one day, I knew it's only going to get better from here. And another thing that I had to remember is don't focus on the result. You know, don't focus on the result so much, because a lot of time in breaking, it is subjective in a lot of areas. So you can't focus on one result one day and then let that crush your whole mindset or, you know, whatever you're feeling, because things could change. Things will change. It's just a matter of staying consistent.
Yeah, agree. On a completely like side note here, I was just thinking about breaking and trying to relate to it from my experience. Through for me, gymnastics is called artistic gymnastics. When artistic gymnastics was in its infancy, you know, the expression was, of course, physical, but very much artistic, meaning you were creating through your body. And then whatever was the most attractive or appealing to the eye, and people were like, oh my God, this looks amazing, that started becoming the foundation and the elements that became the building blocks for what is gymnastics today. And something that's interesting is that the more technical a sport or a physical craft becomes, the more you have to go back to the roots of artistry. Because if you don't do that, you don't push the sport. And what I see in what you do is that you, although you are true to the foundation of breaking, and you honor that through what you do, there's something about you that is always pushing back on the technical from a place of creativity. And it seems like that is your superpower. Is that true, or am I making that up? How do you feel about that when I say it?
Yeah, no, I literally, when I go into these competitions, I really feel like this is my area. This is where I have to capitalize on, is the creative aspect of this whole dance. Because, and I don't know how I got this mindset, but one thing I think is because being in Texas, we're kind of isolated from like the East Coast hip hop or breaking and the West Coast breaking. And even though they had their foundation and their own styles and their upbringing, we were kind of left in the dark. So we kind of had to create or do what we thought was breaking or what was right. So even though we might have had, like, we might not have that upbringing that others have had, but we just kind of created and we just had that essence that if you feel it, go for it. If you, like, you know, create the moments and all of that, just knowing how to attack and stuff, because we didn't have that foundation when we first started. So having people come in and introduce the foundation after we already knew what we thought was breaking, I felt like it kind of helped us and elevated us a little bit more, because on top of what we've been doing, it's just something else that was added. So, and it gave us a little more structure. And then going with it just, I don't know, you get something magic. You get something magical.
Yeah, there's something very powerful about not being influenced by others in the way that you should do it, and doing it the way that you feel like you should do it, and then contrasting or comparing just to integrate and level things up. That makes sense to me now that you're saying it. I had never thought about it from that angle. And it kind of brings me to ask you this. What's your earliest childhood memory? Not about breaking, not just like earliest childhood memory that you have that is kind of like living and part of you and what you do.
Earliest childhood memory. Man. I mean, the earliest, it's not even, now, yeah, it's nearly not about breaking. I just remember being a kid and like we're like this super rundown apartment. I mean, this is probably not what you're expecting, but this is the earliest memory I have is like, literally, it rained. There was a puddle of water. I don't know. I just remember drinking that puddle of water. It was raining. I don't know. It was just, it's weird. It's a weird memory that I remember. But it was this apartment. I want to say it was called Sweetwater. But I just remember it was raining and then there was a puddle of water. I remember I had a straw and I was sipping.
That's insane.
That's the earliest.
That's insane. Okay. And where was this?
This was in Houston. This was North Houston. When my family came in from Haiti, We were first stationed in North Houston. Then we moved all around, and now we found ourselves Southwest.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about how you and your family came to the U.S. and came from Haiti.
Yeah, it was so we came down here in 1994. That was when I was born. But the reason why we're able to get out of Haiti was because of this refugee program that my dad signed up for. And randomly, they chose a random, I don't even know, they chose a random handful of people and we were randomly selected. And it was because there was a lot of just bad political things happening and the government was like breaking down. And there's similar to what's happening in Haiti right now. But not as bad. And so people are trying to leave. And this is kind of like the way that people are trying to seek asylum is through this refugee program. And we got out, they put us in Houston. And then that's kind of how we started. Like our family started here in Houston. When I was born, I have brothers and sisters that was born in Haiti. But when we moved over here, that's when I was born. We went back to Haiti, then came back over here. Even till now, we're bringing people in from Haiti. So,
wow.
Yeah, so my uncle's finally here years and years later. So I want to say like 3 months ago, we finally brought some of my uncles in legally, of course.
I mean, that is a reality that probably shapes you in many ways that I don't know if it's something that you think about often or not. But I assume it's pretty present in your parents and maybe your siblings that were born there. Does this affect you or shape you in any way? Or do you feel like this influences how you make decisions and how you navigate the world? Is there anything that you hear from your family that's kind of like a recurring theme of like, hey, Jeffrey, this or that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel my parents, they kind of instilled this mindset of just giving. And the same way we were given this opportunity, we're trying to give other people opportunity. My dad's always been an advocate for Haiti and trying to solve this problem with this, like everything bad that's going on in Haiti. We've been donating, fundraising. We do a lot of things just to help out Haiti, our family in Haiti, but also like other orphanage in Haiti. And whenever there's a natural disaster that puts Haiti in that position where they need food, they need water, they need clothes. And so we're always finding ways to donate. And I feel like I carry that with me, not even only for like things like essential needs to living, but also just in giving. Like if a kid needs something, like if they need something, I'm always there trying to help with whatever it may be. So it could just be dance classes and I might just get free dance classes. You know, it could be something as small as that. But it's always about giving because I have some memories where people gave me stuff and I'm just like, hey, I got to give back. And it's because whenever they did give it to me, they said, hey, whenever you get older, I want you to do the same thing to others. So there's things that I always encounter people that's always giving us stuff, and then they remind you, hey, make sure you do it for the next. So, it's always been a thing with me, my family, but I feel like it really came from my family. So, and I just carry it with me.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I don't know how much you've talked about this publicly, but I haven't heard you speak about it too much. But when I hear you share this, it kind of makes sense to me. I've known you now for maybe close to 2 years, and every time I speak to you, there is this undercurrent or underlying like sense of generosity and like a jovial spirit, so to speak. And it's almost like you don't take for granted the gift of life and the gift of what you do and have. Yeah,
Exactly.
it's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I love that. Talk to me about a little bit about your dancing career. When did you start dancing and realize, okay, I just want to do this.
Yeah, it was, man, it was still in that moment of transitioning into college. So I started dancing at around the age of 10, and I knew I liked it. I knew I liked dancing. And the reason how and why I knew I liked dancing was because my older brother, he learned from school. He came back home and taught me some breaking moves, and then I kind of got into it. But and I liked the cool moves, but at the same time, I think it was the that freedom that he had whenever he was moving and just dancing, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna dance like that. And there was this moment I remember when we go to parties, my parents or others will always tell him, hey, go dance whenever there's music. They'll tell him, oh, go dance, go hit a backflip, go do a this, some dynamic movement. And I would always try to tell him, I'm like, nah, go top rock, which is pretty much like the dancing that you do standing up. So it's not as flashy, but it's more, you're more in touch with the music, and you just see that whole style. And that's what I like the most. And that's when I kind of got into breaking as like, oh man, I want to dance fresh. I want to do this. I didn't really care about the crazy moves as much. But that's what kind of held me into breaking. And then whenever I got into high school, I didn't think I was going to be breaking long. I kind of thought after I graduate, I was going to do it leisurely. Just because my parents, with everything coming in from Haiti, I knew that my dad wanted me to get a degree of like an engineer or something in the healthcare, something like that where we could actually make money, provide for our family. And then I graduated and I was like, okay, yeah, let me just make my parents happy. Let me go through this, get the education that they want me to get. And it was, I want to say, halfway through my college, like my college experience, I was reached out to by Monster Energy, and they basically told me, hey, you want to be a sponsored athlete? And I was like, hey, been breaking, all right, cool. So basically when they offered me that, I was kind of like, it kind of opened my mindset as far as, oh dang, maybe I can create a sustainable lifestyle through breaking. So that's when I actually took breaking, and I'm like, all right, we're going for it. And then I created Fit Break on the way out of college through a project. It was actually made in a college project where we had to add value to our internship. So as I was adding value to my internship, I wanted to provide some low impact other fitness that you don't have to, because we're at a gym. I'm like, you don't always have to use weights, and there is really no studio. But I was like, all right, well, let's create some type of full body exercise, no weights, still dance. So then that's how Fit Break came out of that. And then,
Wow.
like a year later, I created a business out of it.
That is so cool. Yeah, so you did the college thing, and then halfway through college, all of a sudden Monster comes around and says, "Hey, do you want to do this for money?" And you're like, "Okay, yes." How do you approach your parents and say, "Hey, I'm going to do this thing called breaking now, and I'm going to make it my career." And what do they say?
I remember whenever I was in high school, because we're doing school shows, My parents did not. Well, for sure, my dad didn't like me breaking at all. He didn't like any of my brothers breaking. We had a performance where we practiced months and months for. Literally, we're like, all right, we got to stay behind. We're telling them we got to stay behind and do this performance. He was like, no, y'all not doing the performance. And we're like, we're going to do the performance. So we went to the school, we're doing our performance. He literally came to the show and got us out of the performance. And we're like the lead. We're like the lead performers. So honestly, it kind of messed up the whole show, but we're like, yeah, it was pretty bad. Like, he really didn't like us dancing at all. But it wasn't until recently, years later, I'm on this Olympic pathway. It's 2022 at the World Games. I don't even think I told my parents I was like at the World Games. And I remember my sister, she shared a video of my mom. She was recording my mom, and my mom was dancing. I'm on TV dancing. She's over here celebrating, like, oh, come on, that's good. Like supporting me. And I was like, that's crazy. I would never have expected that, you know? Like, it took till 2022 to see that, you know? So, but everything before has just been a struggle, consistent, like I'm gonna go dance on the side. I'm gonna go do this. But, you know, they found comfort in it, and they found out like everything I was doing, and they're like, yes, all right, you know, we approve, and you continue doing it. You can find a way to do it. They're supporting too, so it's pretty tight. Because even my dad now, he's telling people, hey, my son, he's dancing. He has a video of me dancing on his phone and stuff, so it's pretty cool. He
That
showed it
is
off.
amazing.
He's telling people, hey, you want classes? Yeah, right.
That's
So it's pretty cool.
amazing. Okay, that's amazing. So now you're on
Yeah.
Team USA. You come back from the Pan Am Games with a medal, hardware, like the real thing. It sounds like your parents are proud of you for what you're doing. And I'm curious to know, what does that
Yeah.
mean to you to have your parents' approval, especially knowing the history of them coming from Haiti and starting their lives here basically from scratch, and now you being in this position where you've taken an alternative path, definitely not the safe one or the secure one, but you've definitely found success within it. I'm curious, what does it mean to you to have your parents' approval?
It literally took a whole like load off my shoulders. Like, now I could really do this like without stress, just really put all my energy towards it, and then I had the support of them behind me. And now, I mean, low key, there's a lot more pressure now because now I have to make something happen. You know, like they've trusted me with this, and they're behind me 100%. So now it's like, okay, what am I gonna do with it? And I'm doing a lot more than I thought I would too. So I'm already feeling a lot of accomplishment with what I'm doing right now. But I always have a lot more that I want to do. I want to continue to give back, and then bring my family, help bring some more family members over. So it is good. It's a good feeling, but at the same time, it's there's responsibility with it too.
Yeah, and that responsibility, which as you're speaking to me here, I clearly feel it and sense it. Is there a way that you communicate your sense of responsibility to your parents in a way that they hear it from you and that they feel reassured? Is there anything that you say to them that you're like, hey, I got this, or don't worry, or yeah, anything like that?
To be honest, I don't think I've ever told them anything to feel secure with what I'm doing. It's more like, you just got to see it. And that's kind of that's kind of our relationship with my parents. I'm kind of just showing, you know, I just got to show them, because I don't think words would really do much for us as far as like how we think. It's more like, all right, let me see you do it. So yeah, that's the proof.
I love that. And the reason I'm asking you this is because I know that some people listening to this right now are in a position where they want to do something that goes against what maybe their families, their communities expect them to do. And of course, they don't necessarily want them to be unhappy. They just want them to be safe and feel good and to maybe, you know, honor all the foundation and work that's been done up until that point. And it doesn't matter how much you tell people that you're going to do something. You just have to demonstrate it and model it. And
exactly.
And that takes time. So I love that you're saying that. And it's cool that you at least now have a track record where you've proven that you can produce results. You have some
exactly,
leverage there.
Exactly. Uh-huh, right? It took some time, but, you know, it came. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so now I just got to keep building off of that, you know? It's not too much pressure. I just feel good because I'm able to, like you said, I have that track record. And now they trust my ability to at least make something happen out of nothing. So, you know, hopefully we make it through breaking and we build and we just build and build. But worse comes to worse, you know, regardless, I'm going to be able to create off of nothing. So, mm-hmm. So there's no worries there.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I feel like breaking kind of have that, you kind of build that, all of those developmental characteristics through breaking, like the whole being creative, learning how to build on your own, being your own support system through the countless hours in the garage, trying to create and just be different. So a lot of the style and I don't know, there's a lot that go into breaking that I feel like if you mastered breaking, at least the mindset of a breaker, then you're literally able to do whatever you want. It's just a matter of just staying consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And something that I know about you personally is that, you know, when I first got into the breaking scene a little bit, just as somebody who was a supporter and a fan, I learned about B-boy time, being on B-boy time, which is you're always late, you're kind of a disaster type thing. And with you, you've never been late. You've been extremely good at communicating. You've always followed through with everything that I have talked to you about. You have pivoted or changed your ways according to the results that you're producing, meaning you're adaptive. And you continue to surprise with how you perform, where I'm like, holy shit, and he's getting better. I think that's pretty cool, and I may be biased. I'm a fan, and I love what you do. But if you are a representative of the breaking scene and of professionalism, then I would say that breaking is the real deal, and it has all the elements for producing secure careers, long lasting ones, and something very special. And I'm not saying everybody can do what you do, but I believe that breaking has it. So that's cool. Jeffro, my next question, talk to me about this whole like Olympic journey. Give me the highest high you've had and the lowest low of this experience.
Oh, man. The highest high was in 2022 during the World Games. Literally just seeing my parents behind me, that was the highest high that I've had. And that was the first USA delegated event for the breakers. And it was just a whole, like, I don't know, like what I was feeling was just crazy. So I just felt like I was on top and everything is just looking good. And I just felt like a sense of accomplishment. And I can't even tell you what the lowest low is. Maybe that's a tough one. I never really thought about it. But the lowest low.
Maybe you shouldn't say it. Maybe you shouldn't say it because it's like, oh, whatever. I don't need to know. I feel good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I felt like I never really low, like in this whole pathway. Just because I know if something happens, you know, that's just one of it. There's been a time where I got eliminated early and the other members of Team USA started going past like higher in the tournament. And I was just like, dang. But then I knew, okay, that's just an event. We've been doing this for 2 years, you know? So one event can't really alter the course of everything like that. So just keeping myself in the right mindset, kind of just helps me. So I never really felt like, this is bad.
Yeah. Are you referring to Nationals, or was it another, or was it a World Series event?
It was both, actually.
Because Nationals
happened. Yeah, Nationals happened. I want to say Nationals. All right, that was actually probably the lowest. Just because Nationals happened, I was training for Nationals. No, I came back from Japan, and I got, like, silver medal in Japan, and it's a World Series. So then Nationals came around, and I'm like, oh, I'm feeling confident. And I kind of took my foot off the gas. I was a little too confident. That period, that whenever I started feeling like not doubting, but just kind of upset with myself, is because I came out of the World Series a bit, silver medalist, and then Nationals, and it's only the people in your country, so I'm super confident. I go in first round, and yeah, I just took my foot off the gas. I just thought I was gonna win. Like, I thought it was gonna be a cakewalk, and then yeah, I lost first round. I'm like, dang, and people came to see me. This was the closest event to me. So then I'm like, ah. And then after that, that was a World Series event. Shortly after that was a World Series event. And I decided to change my, I don't like wearing long sleeves when I dabble, because I need every, like, I want to feel secure and stable in any freeze that I get into. So if I do an elbow freeze, I like that protection. Like, I'd like to have nothing so I can feel the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But that one event after that, I wanted to come fresh and something new, just like as a, I'm back almost. And then when I did, it was a long sleeve. So then I got on the floor, I slipped, messed up. So that was an early elimination as well. And I was just like, no. And yeah, so then the next event, I was like, oh no, I'm winning or something. Something's happened. Something's happened.
I think there's a lot of lessons in that. There's a lot of lessons because I think Nationals, okay, this is just me as an observer. I think Nationals was the biggest upset of for you and for Gravity, especially, because you were in such a great position, and to lose in, I think, top 16 for you at a national event was terrible for you, and it actually had huge consequences later on.
Yes.
Which tells us a couple things. No matter the size of the event, you have to show up 100 every time. Like, you just cannot afford to show up below that. If you're going to show up 100%. If not, don't show up at all. I think that's one lesson. And it's
lesson learned.
A lesson learned. And it's cool to see that the greats have to, you know, experience this kind of pain like you're experiencing. The other thing is, look how interesting it is when our egos get in the way, where all of a sudden we're like, oh man, I had this slip up. I have to come back and like the new me, or like I'm back type thing, and see if I can like shape myself or mold myself or rebrand myself. And then you do that, and then all of a sudden it backfires and hurts you. Like, all of a sudden you slip on something that you never slip on just because you were thinking about maybe the fit.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Right. And then all of a sudden you're like, holy shit. So what do you do? Well, you go back to the thing that has worked for you the whole time. And just to hear you say this, I may be projecting onto you right now and just like telling you what's happening. But the fact that you can say this to me is inspiring, because I'm like, oh yeah, that gives me the confidence to trust that my style, my way, that which has gotten me to a level of success in the past, can continue to get me there. It's maybe more about how I choose to show up to things and to kind of stay true to that. Yeah. Does that ring true to you, or am I making that up, or how do you feel about it?
No, that's 100% on point, and that's kind of what I was getting to at the beginning. It's like, you just got to be genuine and stay true to yourself, because this is the moment that you start doing things out of your norm, and it just, you know, it's either not you, or it's either not going to be the best you. So, and that's kind of what I learned. I was like, yeah, I need to just go back, wear my comfortable pants, wear my comfortable shirt. It's not flashy, it's just solid. get into that right mind, like that headspace. Because a lot of time, even with breaking, one of the things that kind of affects you too is one thing they talk about for sure in the U.S. They talk about you got to be fresh, you got to have style, you got to do this. You can't wear this in a battle. There's people that's got made fun of just because of the shoes that they wear in battle. Whether it's better for, like, it works for them, you're still gonna. Some people are just like that, and I feel it a lot in the U.S. But other countries, people don't really feel it or care as much. But for sure, it feels like there's something that. Being a USA breaker, you kind of had to carry that freshness, that style. And, but at the end of the day, if it's going to hurt you, yeah, it ain't worth it. It ain't worth it because nobody's going to care what you wear a day after, you know? It's just, we get caught up in that moment.
Yeah, that is true. Yet, you seem to have the ability to wear the simplest things and make them look fresh. For example, at the World Games, if we go back to the World Games, you changed outfit, I think, twice or at least once. And I mean, it wasn't like a major change. You're just wearing a t-shirt and pants, but it looked amazing. And on TV, I remember sending you a text message later saying, dude, you look like a superstar. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's how you wear it.
It's how you wear it. And the same thing with the moves too, is how you do it. It's a matter of how, you know. But it's funny because that first fit that I wore whenever I lost, because it was during round robin when I wore the first fit, and then I lost it, and I was like, why did I lose? I don't understand how I lost. Like, some of the people on the side, they're like, yeah, I don't understand. Like, we literally genuinely couldn't understand why I lost. So I was like, let me go back to something uncomfortable. So I put on something else, a nice little normal shirt, some comfortable pants, some shoes. I changed completely. Literally, and there's like a 30-minute window before I get back on, probably. And I was like, I gotta just change. Let me just feel good. And let me just get into that old me. So yeah. But it felt good. I felt good. I remember that text and I was like, this is it.
Yeah, I mean, you pulled it off nicely. Okay, I want to talk about practice a little bit, and I want you to tell me about your approach to your training, your practice, and how do you structure that, and what do you do in between seasons and during and in season? What does training look like for you?
Yeah, so on a typical training week, I would break it down into threes. So let's say the first one being a Monday, strength and conditioning. Tuesday would be a practice session, which I consider more of a creative session, where I kind of like, it could be hours. I'm just laying on the floor, building, trying to create different patterns and movements, transitions. And then the third day would be more of a session, which is kind of me putting everything together, performing it how I would in a battle. And I just rotate three. And then on top of that, I do have physical therapy for my groin too. And then, so I add in different things that I need. So I might have a mobility session for my shoulders, which I literally just did right before coming in to this interview. But yeah, so I layer it up. I layer my days with things like that just to, you know, try to get the best and the most out of it. And I haven't really figured out exactly how to, I guess, for breaking periodization, like structure everything, because one, off seasons are not really a thing in breaking, but we kind of have to just find our way to, hey, stop breaking now. So trying to get into that feel of this is off season. So technically I'm on off season, but at the same time, I got to figure out how to deload and not go as hard. Because I don't know, I just find myself in the lab whenever I get into the studio, I just find myself wanting to create and just build and push myself. So that's something I have trouble with, but I do know what I need to do.
All right.
It's just actually doing it. I'm like, I'm too excited to dance. I'm too excited to come up with new things, you know? And part of it is because I'm like, dang, I want to get it. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. You, dude, you're bringing up something that is, I think, super powerful. I think when you're so passionate about something and you love something so much, like you love dancing and you love breaking, you have to demonstrate some kind of restraint in the way that you approach it, because otherwise you'll burn yourself out. You'll get into injuries and things that will set you back. Is there a conversation that's happening in your mind where you're like, man, today is like doodles day. I just have to like just play around with some things, but I can't go hard. I can't session.
I still have to remember my injuries. That's what helps me the most, is like my injuries. I'm like, do I want to feel that again? Do I want to be out that long? Because Chile, the Pan Am Games over about a month ago, I think I've been on it from the beginning of the year all the way to November, to the point where that week everything just came. Like, I felt everything. My groin, I restrained my groin. Something, I don't know what. It was like my rotator cuff or something. I don't know. But that started happening. My wrist started hurting. I had a crick in my neck all in 1 week, which never happened before. Really, it was in a span of 3 days. And I had to compete on it. And yeah, and it was just one of those things where I'm like, hey, I need to take a break. So after the wedding actually allowed me to take that break and having the honeymoon, and you know, so I was able to rest. So that still was good. But now that I'm here, I'm trying to stop myself. But I think the remembering my injuries and what happened is kind of what's holding me from doing something crazy.
Totally. Totally. Well, that's good. So yeah, you had to experience pain to get to this point where you're making better decisions for yourself. There's a famous quote by Ray Dalio that says that pain plus reflection equals progress. So it seems like, yeah, you've experienced some pain.
That's true.
Yeah, you've had to think about it. Now you're like, okay, this is going to lead to me getting better.
Exactly. That's on point. Yeah, that's great. Who was that? Who said that?
Ray Dalio.
Ray Dalio.
Yeah, he's a money guy. So maybe that leads to the next question. In the business of breaking, for you specifically, how do you make this thing work? Like, what's the mechanism for you having enough money or making enough money to be able to break as much as you break and train as much as you train, so that you can continue to build your business and your career? What does that look like? Can you give me a little insight? Give me a little insight on how the business of Jeffro works.
Yeah. So, I feel like the number one thing you can do as a breaker or even just an athlete is build that brand. And this is something that I struggle with too, just because I'm not always online. I'm always doing things with my fitness program on the back end. So it takes a lot of time, but at the same time, my training, and I don't document things. I'm not the type to pick up a camera, which I'm trying to change. I'm actually buying a camera now that I could just always have with me. But that's the main thing, because I feel whenever you do stop competing, let's say if you're sponsored, a lot of companies, if you're not competing, then they're not paying. Or what other skill or attribute do you have that could help add value to that company and keep pushing, you know, sales or whatever it may be. So, and I don't necessarily have that branding, I feel, but I do want to create and continue to create something that is valuable. And that could be FitBreak, so that other companies could say, okay, well, not only does he have this, he has that. So I feel like making yourself valuable in some type of way is key to thrive as far as an athlete. And for myself, I'm still building up the brand Jeffro and the brand FitBreak. And yeah, and I'm trying to make it that. I'm trying to make it exactly that. But as far as having that recipe down yet, I don't have the recipe, but it's coming. It's coming. I've just got to, you know, to just keep going, be consistent with it, and yeah, and just add these little things, because like I said, I'm trying to level up myself as far as the branding side of things go. So I'm getting the camera, I'm getting a personal videographer too, just to help me. And yeah, so it's all about just reflecting and making those changes. So 2024 is going to be a way better year, and then I'll have documentation of everything and just be that more marketable.
Yeah, I think that's a well said. I'm curious, for you specifically, in terms of being marketable, what have you noticed makes you more marketable or more sellable, or somebody who people want to include in their ventures or brands or initiatives?
I feel every time, and this is what I notice, every time I just post not generic, but things that people could relate to, then I get a lot more response as far as, oh, I get that. I understand you. I feel you. And it's just things like that I feel like that's really what I need to continue doing. Because I feel like if you stay too far away, if you look too untouchable, if you look like Superman, you know, people aren't gonna, you know, they'll see you. It might come off as being cocky. It might come off like as being arrogant, whatever it may be. But you want to be a little more down to earth and relatable. And that's what I found helped me the most. And now I just got to really just do that a lot more. And that's my goal, because I feel like my lifestyle, I really hang out with my friends. I really do all these things that normal people do. I just do it in a way where, I don't know, I just feel almost exclusive in a sense. So, and I feel like that's what people really catch on to. So, but that's one thing I noticed. It's like, I just got to be more relatable. And that's really what works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just going to share some of my thoughts. Like when if I didn't know you in the way that I do know you, and I just kind of look through the social media lens, I would be like, oh, Ratty Daddy, he is part of the cool kids club. And I wonder, how do I get into the cool kids club? Can I ever make it, type thing? So yeah, you've created a very exclusive vibe. But then when I talk to you, you're extremely inclusive, which is interesting. And I think it's I think it's cool, and I think you should just keep doing that, because it's what you are and what you do. But I think the link there is that I think you're just a nice guy and you're a jovial person. Like, I think it seems like you enjoy life.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like you said, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm like, I don't know. Is that not a crutch, but is that what holds me back? Is it having that, oh man, my phone is really about to die.
Am I going to lose you if this phone dies?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Get a charger, get a charger. Or move us.
Let me get a charger.
Yeah, let's go for a move. We're fine. This is how the podcast goes.
Yeah, right? Little tour.
Yeah.
Take a little tour.
Yeah, dude, you have to adapt.
Downstairs. You have to adapt.
You got to keep moving. Okay, going into 2024, what's the mindset? What's the goal? Yeah, what are you doing?
Oh, man, so this is where things get a little hazy, just because I am trying to focus on being an athlete. Just an athlete. As you told me, as others told me, stay focused on being an athlete. But with the fitness program, I am still trying to develop it. So I'm trying to do both at the same time and trying to figure out exactly how to minimize, you know, like all my efforts into FitBreak, and kind of like save some for Jeffro. So, and that's kind of what I have planned, is let's build up the brand a little more, Jeffro brand a little bit more, and then focus on FitBreak later. But at the same time, I still want to have everything in place to where it's not just dead, you know, it's still going to grow. I have a good team of people, so I'm really grateful for that. But yeah, I just got to figure out how to completely trust that they have everything and not worry about what's going to happen, you know, because I'm always trying to provide, and I know they trusted me. So I'm always trying to, okay, let me for sure, I have an obligation to, you know, to take you to take you with me and to propel the business and propel everybody. So part of me is like, I can't stop, because then I don't want it to just be stagnant. But at the same time, like, I got to trust. I got to trust. So, yeah. So this year coming up, 2024, it's going to be about just trusting that the team is going to take it, and at the same time, just build on myself.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to business, being able to make yourself replaceable in some way, it makes that business itself successful, because now it's not dependent on you, but rather on what you built. So I hear that. And the good news is that the more you build up Jeffro and your brand, the more energy you're going to be able to inject into FitBreak, the more attention it's going to get. And yeah, my sense is that if you stay in a 80-20 split, where it's 80% of your time Jeffro the athlete, and then 20% of your time leading FitBreak, by the time the Olympics comes and next, you know, the next season comes for you, you'll be able to flip 80% FitBreak, 20% Jeffro, and it will pay off. That's just my sense, which I'm excited for you about.
Yeah, but that's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can do that, and you've demonstrated that. Curious. Okay, take me to being invited to Red Bull BC One Finals to be part of the top 16. What did that mean to you? Completely different platform, yeah. But definitely a significant one.
Yeah, when I got the call, I actually had a gig that weekend in Japan, and I got the call, and I literally was like, "I'm canceling this. I'm going to Red," because that's just been something every breaker, you know, in my generation has always seen growing up. And I never ever thought I would ever be in that stage, on that stage. It was never a thought. It's not even like I tried to be, it's like it was never a thought. And even years, like let's say 5 years ago, I never tried to, like, you know, really tried to be on that stage. I've been invited to some ciphers, but I never really made it a thing to, I want to be on the world final stage. So getting that invite, one, it just shows the work that I've been doing the past couple of years is being noticed. And then it was kind of like, oh, wow, I'm really here. I have friends calling like, oh, man, you really made it. I'm like, no, not really, but it's just because we always saw that event at that level. So, but yeah, but it was a great feeling, a great experience. Now it makes me want more because I've been able to just touch that stage. Now I'm like, okay, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I don't know when I'm gonna go for it again, but I can do it, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's possible. Yeah, that is amazing, and it's cool when a childhood dream of yours comes true. I'm curious. You also organized your own event this year with your crew, and that was a fun experience. In addition to that, where do you feel the most connected to the extended breaking community, which goes beyond like this purely competitive breaker? Because I think breaking has so much more than just the competition. And I'm curious, where do you feel the most connected to your community beyond what you're doing as an athlete within breaking?
Yeah, I really feel for sure my city, because I throw the Ether. That's my crew's annual event. And then now we have a FitBreak Jam or FitBreak Breaking Championship. And those events really get the community involved. Like, everybody is in, everybody's excited. And it's just fun because they're the competition, but at the same time, we're not focused on the competition. We're focused on just the vibe and just bringing back that feel of a local event, you know? But it feels more prestige just because we try to have like good, like prize money, a good trophy that people would really be proud of having. So yeah, but it's pretty cool. The whole city, like everybody comes out from not even just breakers, but other styles and dancers come out, and it's just a good feel. And so that's where we really feel connected to the scene. And we also do monthly community classes where it's free. free to anybody that wants to learn. So we're always consistently in the community. You're going to catch at least 1 month in the community doing something. So like once a month. So, but yeah, but that's really where we kind of build that community is with these events.
And now in like, if we just take your whole career as a breaker beyond you being with Monster and being a professional, so to speak, what has been the most surprising thing that's happened to you within this time?
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that surprised me. But the most surprising thing, like the relationships I've gotten or forged through breaking. And because a lot of them started off, not even a lot of them, a lot of the relationships that I had with the older generation or the legends or whoever it may be, it probably didn't start from a nice, friendly handshake, like, hi, you know? it's and not that things were heated back then. It's just, I don't know. There's a lot of moments that I've had with others that's been, like, let's say, for example, through the call out in 2021, which caused a major uproar to see. The whole scene was pretty divided on whether something was right, whether something was wrong. But in that, you know, I built these relationships with people that was involved. And that's kind of that connection to the current Jeffro. So where I'm at now, it's like these relationships were built through this moment, but now it's like in a positive way. And I feel like if that didn't happen, not that I planned for it to happen, but if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't have progressed. And what I mean by that is I feel like a lot of breakers have, like the known breakers have a moment where they overcame an obstacle. Those are like the two things. You either had a moment or you overcame an obstacle. And a moment could be Gravity doing a double backflip. And he kind of created his name and like off of that double backflip and his energy. But that double backflip is something that somebody's going to remember. For example, someone like Zeku, he's been the type that at first people were talking down on him when it was coming up, saying, oh, biter, biter, biter. But then he overcame it and it started beating the favorite, like, you know, everybody's favorites. And, you know, kind of putting himself on that level. And I feel like the same thing with the call out that happened in 2021 is I was given that test. Me calling out the judges, if I did bad, the name would have been tainted or so, you know, something crazy. I don't know. But the fact that I feel like I overcame that situation, and even the jam, the competition after, the judges were against me. And I lost early, and the whole scene was kind of like, what? Like, that was wrong for that. Y'all were wrong for that, you know? But I knew that was going to come. But and then I just had to keep proving myself just to be that force. So I feel like that was a moment that happened that surprised me. But at the same time, I think it is partially the reason why people are kind of giving me that notoriety or okay, I'm going to look at you now. I'm going to see what you're doing now. And then given that chance, I think I've really have been able to grow. So,
yeah. Yeah. I like that. You either create a moment or you overcome an obstacle. And just for people listening that know nothing about breaking, when Jeffro said biting, what he was referring to was copying other people's styles. And later on, Zeku managed to go beyond what he was learning from others, which was just him like building his, I assume, his skill set, now creating his own and be, yeah, the name that he is in the world. And then for you, for people that don't know what you're talking about in terms of the call out, you were at an event and then you decided to speak up when you saw that it was most likely unfair that you had been voted against. Yeah. And what was it in that moment? Why did you stand up and like get on the mic and say that?
Yeah, so it was this long story, but so I can't tell the, because I do believe that a lot of the stuff before my battle that I felt like I was wrong, and I know everybody have their own opinion whether I was right or wrong, but I had, I don't know, it's things prior to that too that I kind of had in my mind. So, and then I kind of knew going into the battle, I was probably going to be getting duped. So, and then when it happened, I was like, okay, I didn't plan on calling anybody out. I was just kind of in my feels, and one of the commentator guys told me, hey, let's get you on camera. Let's just ask you some questions. For some reason, I didn't think he was going to ask me about the call out. I just was, okay, let's get on there. So, well, not about the call out, but about the battle. For some reason, I didn't think he was going to ask me about the battle. So I got on there, and then he asked me, I was like, oh, he was like, so what do you think about the battle? You know, I'm like, you don't ask a loser. Somebody that just lost, what do you think? You know, so that's kind of what started it. And then I talked to the promoters, and I was like, hey, I'm going to call these people out. Is there a section in your show, like in the production of things, where there's a break or something where I can just do that so I can handle business real quick? And then y'all can go back to whatever y'all have. And because usually you don't ask, you just call somebody out. But I understand this was being live streamed and there's a whole production to it. So I basically asked if there's a break that I could like literally like just handle it on the side, and you know, that could be it. But they decided to live stream it. And that's kind of how the world kind of, you know, knew about it. But yeah, so I literally asked them, and he was like, yeah, go ahead. Well, first they said, wait, I don't know, we might not have it since it's a live show. And then maybe like 20 minutes later, he was like, yeah, you can do it. So, and then I went there and I called him out. And that's kind of what the world knows now.
Which it's interesting to hear this, because one of the things that this show and this podcast is all about is about finding your own way. In that moment, you had this feeling that you had to say something, and you found the courage somehow to do this. You didn't want to do it necessarily publicly. It just happened to become public, but you went with it. And although you were at risk of putting your whole like breaking career in jeopardy, you not only made a moment of it, but you also overcame an obstacle, which was you made it work for you, and you did it by backing up what you said through your actions. And it seems like that's where you
exactly
are. Yeah, today, what do you think it was, besides your extremely positive attitude on everything, that allowed you to overcome like people all of a sudden like shitting on you? Because that's basically what it was. People were pretty upset at what you were saying and doing.
The people around me, really, that's what helped me overcome everything, because I knew this is normal. People around me knew this was normal. People in Texas knew this was normal too. It's just the whole world, or not the whole world, but a lot of people didn't agree with it. So I was not online too much. I was not online a lot. So I didn't experience and I didn't see everything that was being said right away. So people around me, they were pretty positive about everything. We kind of just, it happened and we went. So it's funny, we went online and we saw like everybody talking. We're like, wait, what? And yeah, but at the same time, I had to remember, like, this is what we believe is right. This is the normal thing in the scene. Even though like half the whole breaking world doesn't agree with it, it's something that we've been always told to do if we're wronged. So, and you know, so it happened. And it's interesting, because I think it only blew up because it was the people that we did it to. You know, these people were, some are pipe, well, OGs. Some of them are just like highly liked individuals in the scene. So people are just going to have their back regardless, you know? So that's kind of what blew it up out of proportion, because they've called judges out too, you know? It's not anything new. It's just the people, the moment, everything just kind of like was just lined up for destruction. So whatever it blew up, it became a whole situation. But yeah, just the people around me, I think that kind of just helped me stay positive, because we knew what it was and they knew what it was. And even like talking to, because I talked to some of the people involved after, and they were like, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. This is part of breaking. So it was just a lot of outside noise. So just not like toning out the outside noise was kind of like what helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. I like that. Let's bring this to a little close. You were talking earlier in the podcast about authenticity and just kind of being yourself and doing your thing. I'm curious, what's the message you give people who seek you out or come up to you for advice? What's the like one thing that you find yourself repeating?
I feel a lot of people ask me questions about, oh, what do you think about my dancing? What do you think? Do you think I won this bout? Random people, they'll send me things. And they're looking for a solution to fix in their break, like something to fix. And I always tell people, you have to have imagination. You have to believe and create something that's yours, because not everybody's going to like what you do, but if you believe it, then you're not going to feel that stress and that pressure from everybody else. Because there's times that I've done battles and I ask people, hey, what do you think I should do? They say, oh, you got to add power. You got to add freezes. You got to add this. Literally, these judges that even judging right now, that's what they'll tell me. But then I go and I do competitions and I win now, and I'm not doing these things that they've been telling me to do. So it's everything is subjective. It's just you got to do what you feel is going to help you find that peace. And a lot of people, you're not going to be able to do what this other person's going to do. So it's more about just like what you want to do and how you're going to, you know, finesse and level up. So one thing I always tell, to be genuine, be yourself, and don't worry about all this outside noise. Have no expectation. Whenever you go into battle, have no expectation, because judges change, opinions change, trends change. So yeah, just stay true to you.
Jeffro, thank you so much. I appreciate you. You know I'm a fan and a supporter. So I am looking forward to seeing what's ahead for you. And everybody listening, go give Jeffro a follow and send him some love. And yeah, we're all rooting for you. And yeah, if there's anything you want people to know, this is your chance. If not, we'll just call it a day.
Yeah, no, appreciate you having me on. You know, this is a good conversation, because it gets me thinking back on things that happened. It gets me reflecting, you know, where I've came from and where I'm at now. So, appreciate everything. Nothing else to say.
Yeah,
just appreciate everything.
Amazing. Thank you. All right. Until next time.
Yes, yes.
This is the Freestyle Way.